Welcome back. I am Dale Lally. He is Matt Williamson. Mm-hmm. We're live on the drive. How about that?
Live on the drive.
Live on the drive.
Yep, yep.
As the Steelers practice here next to us at St. Vincent College. And, Matt, I mentioned in the previous segment there at the end, you always like to play
What if I put these guys out together?
Yeah,
or these guys out together, right.
I mean, mad scientists.
Right, right, right.
With the packages. I mentioned this because Tim Benz, I was on with him last night on a late show. And
he was texting me yesterday, so now I have a hunch where you might be going with this.
He was talking about some you know, they need more 12.
He'd 12 like
see,
personnel.
He'd like to see more 12 personnel. I think he said they played 12 personnel 16% of the time last
I'm gonna
year.
I'm going to pull up my Tim Benz history here.
He there
said
you go.
He went to Sharp Football, and he said the Steelers ran out of 12 personnel only 16% of the time.
Go.
He said,
does
that look right to you? And I said, yeah, it does.
Well, he was wondering that because he looked at the snap counts for Zach Gentry
and
Freiermuth, and they were actually pretty close.
I think they're closer than people think.
Yeah, like Gentry was just a little over 400 and some snaps, and Freiermuth was just over 500 snaps.
Did Freiermuth play all 17 games?
He missed a game.
He missed one.
With a concussion, yeah.
And I know the last playoff game, Gentry out-snapped him, too, but that wasn't in this equation.
Right. But that's because so often last year when they were going to run the football,
right,
it was Gentry. Gentry was in the game.
And Gentry's going to help the O-line
more.
You know,
they were in 11 personnel, and they were going to that's their main, the only two teams that ran more 11 than them were Cincinnati and
Super Bowl
the
teams.
Rams.
Right,
yeah,
right,
the two teams that were in the Super Bowl. So I don't know.
Doesn't leave much percent
left
over.
I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing if the two teams that were in the Super Bowl were doing it.
No, right, right,
but
right.
But you look at the personnel, that's, and he asked me about it, and I said, well, you want to put your best personnel on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to ask Matt Williamson to put on his offensive coordinator hat, who are their best personnel in your eyes? Which one gives opposing defensive coordinators the most fits?
Real quick, though, I mean, just getting in Tim's head, and we've both done a lot of radio with Benzy. I get near his head. I don't want to go in. But I bet he's sitting there thinking, well, I don't remember Freiermuth and Gentry having that close a snap count. You'd think Freiermuth outsnapped.
Yeah.
He's the better player. We
he's
all know that.
Player, yeah.
But if there's only a high percentage of 11, and there's only, what you say, 16% of 12 or 18% of 12,
yeah.
And we know Watt hardly played at all. It doesn't leave a lot of other options because
right.
They didn't run 13 with three tight ends. There were some definitely four receiver sets, though, too.
Yeah.
Not to kill your drill, because I think defense is more fun, actually, for this team.
We can do that after this.
I think it's pretty clear that their best five – well, the difference between defense and offense is there's only five variables, really,
right.
As opposed to 11. Not that T.J. Watt or Cam's leaving the field. But I really think it's Pickens and Deontay on the outside – Claypool on the slot. Freiermuth is an every down tight end, sometimes detached, sometimes in line, and Najee is your back. I mean, I would love to see one of the receivers, and there's several options, including the draft pick, Miller, all those dudes. And I think Gentry deserves snaps, but I think there's a gap after their top five.
I do, too.
Maybe that's giving Pickens a little too much credit already.
Yeah.
But I just think that I'd rather play against Gentry than Pickens.
That's kind of what I told Tim. I'm like, anytime that you're taking, you could do more 12 personnel, but then you've got to take one of those receivers off the field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a win for the defense.
It's a win for the defense. I feel like I'm anointing Claypool as the slot. But we haven't seen it, and we don't know that that'll be.
I think the plan is more just to when they break the huddle, I think their plan is
who's the
slot is going to be
somebody
different. It's going to be different. Maybe Claypool gets the most snaps there, but sometimes it's going to be Johnson. Maybe sometimes it's going to be Pickens.
Okay.
I don't think that they get – when I asked Deontay about that, the earlier week, he said, look, it's no offense to the group that we had last year.
Right, right, right.
But I think we're more diverse this year.
I think Juju's only a slot.
Yeah. Ray McCloud is certainly
only a slot. Right.
James Washington was basically only an outside
slot.
Guy.
Right.
So when those
Good
guys
point.
Are, those guys are on the field and you're the defensive coordinator sitting up in the booth, you're watching us go, okay, they're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is what this is the personnel they've got on the field. We've got this narrowed down now.
Yeah.
With this group, when they're in the huddle and you see Pickens and you see, Freiermuth's out there, and that grouping
that fivesome,
you don't know who the slot's going to be.
No, And that's a good point, because Claypool certainly can do yeoman's work outside as well. It's a good way of looking at it, and I'm sure that was part of their thought process this offseason, is let's not pigeonhole where we're going to line up. And, boy, it's showing out here in the last two practices, too. I mean, Najee's out wide more. Najee might be in the slot once in a while.
Yeah.
Freiermuth might be in the slot once in a while. I don't know, Gentry will be, but, you know, Miller might be out there in four receiver sets, or – you know, all those options. And I think Austin can do everything.
If somebody just ran a, you know, two straight go routes, you have that
Austin
option. Yeah.
Whatever, right. And some defenses, you know, you look at and say, well, Mike Hilton's going to line up in the slot every snap. I know that if we're in there, if we can force them into nickel, and in this matchup, I want to get Claypool on Hilton. You know, I mean, I want to get a big versus little situation and throw him jump balls.
Here comes Mr. Pickens running at us now.
There we go.
So.
He's had some buzz here. That's why I'm putting him on the field as much as possible.
He was zigging and zagging his way through the deep. He's a big dude.
He's a big dude, and he's a little shiftier than
you
think.
He's shifty,
He's got loose hips. I always think of him as more of a outside the numbers only. I mean, that's not what he is. I mean, I think he is. I've been hesitant to say this because I just said it on Stan's show. I think he has a chance to be one of the best receivers in the league. Not like, oh, he's a pretty good player. I mean, I really think he has a chance to be one of the best receivers in the league. And the little I've seen of him live has not changed that opinion whatsoever. I will say, though, if by chance, you know, they're looking for a slot or the Deontay, Claypool, Pickens, whatever, you know, slot situation doesn't exactly go as planned, we might see more 12 personnel. I mean, Gentry's useful.
He's legitimate. And, like, last year at this time, we would not have said that.
Exactly, 100%. Right.
Yeah.
You know, he was closer to not making the team as to being the
Yeah, you're like, okay, can they find somebody to replace Gentry? I think he's done a nice job of re-sculpting his body and you know, kind of reinventing himself as a blocking tight end. He went to college as a quarterback.
Right, big,
Michigan,
tall,
yeah.
Giant quarterback, obviously.
And, as you know, so did Heath Miller. Heath Miller made that transition as well.
That's not uncommon.
Right, yeah.
Because they understand what the quarterback's looking at, how to sit down in zones, read coverage on the fly, similar body types.
But they weren't asking them to block a whole lot at Michigan.
Well, except you don't do any blocking.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, as your former profession. I'm sitting here thinking, though, like, if I'm playing the Browns, Gentry's going to play a lot of snaps, and he's going to be on Myles Garrett's side.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, treated. Or, I mean, if I'm playing the Steelers, I would put Gentry on Watt's side a lot. And he might even out-snap Freiermuth that game. You know, an elite edge rusher changes the opinion a little bit.
But then you can make Freiermuth your slot in a lot of situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the beauty of him. I mean, he runs well enough that, you know, you could put a WR next to his name and it wouldn't be, you know, that big of a deal.
And we talk about this a lot. I mean, this is a big reason people script plays is, I don't have their schedule in front of me, but week five, you trot out there on first and 10 and 12 personnel and you get base. You know, someone plays their base 4-3 or 3-4. Well, you might detach Freiermuth like crazy then.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to play nickel, well, we're going to line them up big and we're going to hit you hard with Harris behind Gentry in a big formation.
Yeah, to use your, you know, if you're playing the Bengals and Mike, you know Mike Hilton's their slot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you know he's a great player, but I'm still going to attack his weaknesses.
I'm going to get him out there, and I want him matched up on the 6'5" tight end.
Or Claypool.
Right, or Pickens. I want him on one of those big guys and force him to.
Even Pickens, like you said. Is he going to press Pickens at the line of scrimmage, even from a slot position?
Right.
Or even down in the red zone, and Pickens might just post them right up.
Now, if the opposing team has a safety that comes down, okay.
That's the beauty of the Dax Hills of the world.
Yeah.
Maybe I won't use
Freiermuth as much in the, you know, as the slot, but maybe then I'll want the shifty guy.
Mm-hmm. Which, flipping things over, is why I might think we might see more of Minka in the slot here and there. I always think about the Ravens. Like, I want him on Andrews every snap. And make him go anywhere but him. You know what I mean? I think that would be a great way to play them.
Yeah,
especially on throwing
down. It's certainly interesting, and I know they've also once again gone with a little two back offense here as well with Najee Harris, and whether it be Anthony McFarland, whether it be the new kid that they signed,
McNichols.
McNichols.
Yeah. So I don't think this team fits that so well, and. Over my career of watching the NFL, every year you hear about, oh, we're going to try two back. And it rarely works
yeah.
because only one of them can carry the ball. But I look at, like, the Packers and think, well, they just traded Devontae Adams. Their tight ends are okay. They're looking for receivers. Besides Aaron Rodgers, of their skill guys, clearly Dylan and Aaron Jones are their most talented players.
Yeah.
And if the Steelers had Aaron Jones or 80% of Aaron Jones,
yeah.
that's the problem, is I don't think any of the dudes we're talking about have proven to deserve snaps over even Anthony Miller, let alone Gentry, let alone
Pickens.
That's
the problem.
You know
what
I mean?
Back to that, you know,
you're right.
Are you doing the defense a favor?
Like, I thought putting Ray McLeod on the field was a favor to the defense.
Yeah.
You know, I want him on the field.
Way too much last year.
Yeah. So if they did have a back that was a pseudo Aaron Jones, okay, you know, that you could put two guys in the backfield and you would assume you'll get base there. I mean, if it's just 21 personnel, two backs, even if one's not a fullback, tight end and two receivers, you should get base at least a high percentage of the time. I mean,
unless you're playing the Bills.
I say the Bills will yeah. have nickel, but and some teams will beg you to run. And you should be able to run. I mean, you would think an A.J. Dillon or a Najee Harris could block a little bit when called upon, you know, or, you know, run quarterback runs out of those things too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, have two of those guys blocking for you. So I do think I really like their receiver room. I really like their top two tight ends for this exercise. But I don't see a back that makes a ton of sense to do that with. And
yeah.
I know they flirted with McFarland last year, jet sweeps and on the field together. He could get there in my eyes, but he hasn't gained my trust.
I've got
yet,
less of
you know?
A problem with him running a jet sweep than I do Ray McLeod.
Yes. He's a bigger, sturdier body.
Yeah, and he's that's what he does. He runs with the football.
And he's better. He's a
yeah.
running back.
Yeah,
yeah, right, exactly. That's a good point. Yeah, again, McLeod to me was too easy to play against.
Yeah,
you know, he's not a diverse route runner. He doesn't break a tackle.
That was part of the problem with their offense to me last year, was that everything was kind of – you had to tip your hand too much.
Yeah.
Of what you were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here comes Zach Gentry on the field. Well, they're probably going to run the
they're
ball.
They're probably going to run the ball. Yeah.
And now Freiermuth on the field. Okay, they're probably going to throw the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've read some, you know, off-season tendencies, and their tendencies were easier to read than most offenses,
yeah.
you know, based on personnel. And you don't want to be in that spot. You know, I mean, that's definitely not ideal. I forget where I was going with that, though. It's some little tidbit, but whatever.
Yeah.
It'll come back
come
to us
you.
In the
yeah.
next month.
It'll come to you. We're going to be here for the next 2 hours. So.
I'm sure I'll see him walk by. I'm like, oh, I want to talk
yeah,
about
we'll
him.
Yeah, we'll talk right, about right. that guy. Yeah, you see Minka Fitzpatrick standing back here behind the defense. He's still.
Oh, if the tackles struggle, though, that puts a wrench in your plans.
True.
You know what
true.
I mean? If the tackles are a liability, you either got to keep Najee to the liability side, or Gentry gets more snaps, or, you know, so. Or all of a sudden you have to become a quick hitting team. So
or if you know, I mean, this is a possibility too because well, guys are allowed to get better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Freiermuth's ever going to be a great blocking tight end, but if
he'll be better this year.
But if he's if he's just an average blocking tight end,
I bet he gets there.
I bet he gets there. Yeah,
by today's NFL standards, he's
right.
not going to be Mark Bruner. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Even if it's just getting in the way.
Yeah.
You know,
he's going to do more than Ebron and,
yeah.
you know, those type of guys. Right. Yeah. I mean, he's going to at least be hard to play against a little, you know.
Yeah. So,
he's not
yeah.
a stiff and he's not weak and, you know, he's not a finesse player.
Right. That's the next part of his game. He mm-hmm. just wasn't asked to do it in college.
Mm-hmm. Remember when he sat down with us in minicamp too? And he had a really surprising answer to this question. I think it was you that asked him, you know, what would you have changed from your rookie year? What did you learn? And he said, I'd lifted more weights.
Yeah.
You know, I would have stayed stronger, thicker, you know, throughout the course of the year, not only to hand the rigors of the pounding, but to dish it out more, you know. Like,
yeah, you won't be able to
right.
deliver
I'm
a
sure
blow.
You don't want to get in the weight room on Monday or Tuesday after a hard game, but, you know, there's something to be said for that. And this is the first year doing it.
Yeah, I think there's a learning curve there for all these guys. And so that's the other thing about this offense. It's so damn young.
So damn young, right?
That these guys are going to grow and grow together. And,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know. I mean, just because they were something last year doesn't mean that's what they're going to be this year because
I don't think it's going to even resemble it, except for the colors of the jerseys.
I
mean, there'll be some similar players,
yeah.
but I don't think it's going to look at all alike.
I know Tim was talking about, I guess, the over-under for Deontay Johnson's catches this year is 90.
Wow.
And the over-under for his touchdowns is 5. I'm like, I'd go over on both of those.
Yeah.
90 catches is only averaging 5 a game.
Right. I mean, he gets like 11 targets a game throughout
yeah.
his career.
I don't think
that
that's
might go down a little.
I don't see it changing dramatically, though.
Right.
And that's where he was going with it. I said, look, he's the most targeted guy on this team because he's the guy that's always open.
He's like the most, like the third most targeted guy in the league in over the last 3 years. It's like Devontae Adams and him. You know,
and that includes his time in his rookie year with.
Oh yeah, yeah.
With Rudolph and you know he was catching. He led the team in catches that year because he gets open.
I mean, I have this goofy theory about over under prop bets that.
Always take all the unders.
Yeah. If I had $8 gazillion, I'd just bet every under, and I think I'd win because every injury gives me a win, you know, let alone the guys that underachieve. But assuming health and he plays 17 games, not 16,
well, that's 17. The thing. Last year he only played 16 games, and he had 107 catches. So you think he's going to average one fewer catch per game, more than one fewer catch
more
per
than,
game.
More than, right, when you really figure it out. Right. Probably not. Five touchdowns doesn't seem crazy, but I'd still go over.
I mean, he had eight last year. He had seven the year before that.
I just think Freiermuth and Pickens are going to get a lot of targets in the tight area.
That's fine, but you know he's still the guy. Like he showed
still a quick
last
separator.
Year.
Right.
Yeah, he separates down the sideline. You know, he can get behind a corner. Like he gets open. That's thing about. That's the beauty of him. He does that better than anybody else in the team. We haven't seen Pickens have to do it yet. Maybe he'll be just as good.
That's part of my reservation. Yeah. Is not a knock on Deontay. It's. If Pickens is as good as I think, he's going to have to eat into somebody's target. If you're on the 6 yard line and he runs
a
slant.
Well, I mean, the way they split that up last year, Ray McLeod had way too
Well, those
many.
Ones are all for the taking. Yeah. You know, he had way too much attention, snaps, targets, all the above. I mean, I hope Miller has some.
I figured this out in
Austin
the offseason.
Some,
how many catches they lost in the offseason. It was like. It was like 90 catches that they got to replace, something along those lines.
I know Roto World, now they're called NBC Sports or whatever, they do a really good job of tracking available targets and available rushes from the year before.
Yeah.
I don't know where I haven't checked it out of where the Steelers are on that list.
Because you remember,
but they'd
you
be
replace,
low on the available
you
got to
remember James Washington had a decent
and
number
McLeod.
Of catches. So
right,
if you had, you take McLeod and Washington.
And Ebron.
Ebron and Juju Smith-Schuster's catches out of the equation. Okay, now you probably got, you know, you're looking at, I think it was right around 90 catches total overall. For
I was going to guess like 150 targets or maybe 100 and a quarter or something like that. Because Juju missed a lot of time.
Yeah. So there's a possibility for, you know, for him to, and I think they're going to be more quality targets. So,
I mean, I expect more first downs this year. I don't know if they'll run more plays in general because, I mean, I do think there'll be some growing pains.
Yeah, that will be the big – they did run a lot of plays last year because they had a lot of three and outs.
right.
And, you know, if you have seven or eight possessions in the first half of every game as opposed to the five that you, you know, might
And get. If you throw a lot, you're going to have – the clock's going to stop more often. And over the course of the game or over the course of a year, you're going to get more plays too.
Yeah.
You know.
But I think there's still enough there to go around.
Without question. Without putting a dent in Deontay's, I think, is your original thought.
Because I don't know that Claypool is going to necessarily get more targets than what he had last year.
He'd have to earn them.
He'd have to earn them.
It's not like he's banging down the door
But it wasn't
get
like
more.
He wasn't targeted last year. He still averaged, he's still at like six a game. Like, I still think that's
I mean, I don't know the Pickens, even as high as I am on him, get six a game.
Yeah.
I don't have any rookie. I mean, rookie receivers getting six a game is a lot.
That would be a lot.
That's a lot, unless you're in a – Drake London might.
Now, maybe, maybe Deontay doesn't get 11 targets a game. Maybe he gets 10.
9.5. Right.
But that still adds up to a lot of catches.
It does. I mean, we have to assume health. I mean, you can't just look at it like, well, if he misses a month, I get that. We know that part.
Absolutely.
Right. But we're setting lines in July, you know.
We will look at the defensive side.
Curious what Austin's number will be when it's all said and done. I have no clue.
I don't know either.
Yeah, no clue.
I don't know either. I don't know what. Again, it's going to be what does he deserve, and are they
who's ahead of him?
Yeah, that's
the thing.
There have
to be really good guys ahead of him.
Yeah,
you know, and when he's out there, he makes an impact, but just doesn't get a lot of opportunity.
You know,
blocked a little bit.
Is he a one or two touch a game guy?
And then
that's on a jet sweep or that's on a shovel pass or something like that, and just let him go run.
I mean, I'm really getting ahead of things, but if Austin and Pickens blow their doors off here in camp. Maybe that changes your contract conversation with Deontay. You know, I mean, just for future years, you know. Just
perhaps. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk defense right after this. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio.
You're listening to the official voice of Black and Gold Nation, SNR. This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24/7 home of the Black and Gold. SNR. Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. And Matt, we talked a little bit about offensive packages there in the previous segment. Let's talk a little defense now. And I think this is fascinating.
I think it's a better conversation for this particular team because there's five offensive dudes and then there's the others. And Gentry's the sixth to me, but he's a certain skill set, you know.
Yeah.
He's not a dangerous playmaker.
Yeah. And it could be maybe Calvin Austin or Anthony Miller or somebody like
that. Right.
Pushes their way into that conversation, but they're not there right now.
Not there now. And you hope one of them emerges, or McFarland, or whoever. Or somebody's not even on the team. I don't know.
But defensively.
So let me throw this at you because I keep referencing this hit I just did with Stan Saverin. He's been asking his listeners, I forget how he phrased it. Who's the most important new Steeler? And of all the new players this year, which one, outside of quarterback, must perform their best? And he prefaced it and he said, Matt, I think it's James Daniels. And I said, I think that's great, but I'm pretty confident that he'll perform well.
Yeah.
And I countered with, what about Mason Cole? Offensive line's a worrisome spot. If he performs his best, is how he phrased it, they'll be in pretty good shape on the O-line. If he's a pretty good center.
But what about Larry Ogunjobi?
And he said Ogunjobi's been getting a lot of votes. And I said, they're all good calls. I get it. I'm going Miles Jack, though. And here's why. And it goes to your conversation is, we talked about this yesterday or the day before. I like their defensive backfield. I see one star in their defensive backfield, and that's Minka, of course. But I see a lot of depth. I mean, if Norwood, who I'm fond of, is their eighth best defensive back or whatever, and this is really a KZ comment, is if they go six deep with Witherspoon, Wallace, Sutton, KZ, and the two starting safeties, Edmonds and Fitzpatrick, my hunch is they play more dime this year.
That's what I'm thinking as well. Yeah.
Which then means Miles Jack was my answer to Stan's question, because Bush is off the field. You got a four-man front, one true linebacker, and six defensive backs. So in order to pull that off, that one linebacker better be pretty darn good. Assignment sound, good communicator, able to play the run, but also, cover as well. So I went with Jack, and I think he's an upgrade over Schobert. I think, that package I also threw out there is also good insurance if Bush doesn't step up, that they haven't had a high-end linebacker for a little while now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can be that guy. And, again, I don't look at what he did last year.
I think last year's a bit of a throwaway, don't you?
I don't look at what anybody did last year in Jacksonville and try to judge
that
player.
Do we all think Trevor Lawrence stinks now all of a sudden?
Right.
So, I mean, that was a dismal, dysfunctional situation.
Completely dysfunctional. Yeah, I think, and the interesting thing is, I think it can be three safeties and three corners on the field.
Yeah, right.
And
three of them can play the slot.
Those might be among your best 11.
That's kind of where I was going with that. I mean, I really think, and I'm talking on both sides of my mouth, though, but I like their D-line room, too.
You know,
six or seven of those guys that – would it be terrible for Alulu to be on the bench with Cam Hayward next to Leal, or and Highsmith and Watt as your edges? I think there's a few constants that I think of those 11, like in the 11 offensive, there's really only five to talk about. And if Harris never leaves the field, there's only four. And if Deontay never leaves the field, there's three. Pretty soon they dry up. But I think Watt and Highsmith are always going to be your edge players. Maybe there's a goal line package where Leal lines up out there, and I could see that if you're really beefy. I think Jack's always going to be pretty much on the second level. Minka's always going to be on the field. A couple of the D-backs you can count on. Cam's going to be factoring in there somewhere. But there's a lot of other options on this side of the ball.
Yeah, and it can be very dependent upon who you're playing.
Ravens versus Bengals is as strong an example as anyone could cite in any division.
Bengals versus Browns.
Or Browns, right. Especially if Brissett's in the game.
Yeah.
Right. So I like their versatility on that side of the ball in terms of personnel packages, in terms of rotating. I always said this, when I was a Pitt, Akron, I was always so jealous of the Bamas of the world that had hockey lines on the D-line. That is the unbelievable. To me, that separates the few – elite college programs. Yeah.
And there's
from
not
the
much drop off. You know,
no. I mean, one's a year younger, but he's going to be a first round pick too. You know, he's just learning, so he's the backup. He has to wait for Barmore to move on or whatever, or, you know, Quentin Williams to move on, or Will Anderson gets stuck behind some stud and then he's the best player in the country, you know. And that all comes down to recruiting, of course. But, and I'm not saying the Steelers' D-line's Bama's D-line, but if you can keep Cam fresh and play 75% of the snaps, and Alualu plays 30, and Ogunjobi plays 70, and Leal plays 15, and Loudermilk plays 20, and I'm not sure if they all add up. You know, I'm just saying, like, I think freshness and bringing guys off the bench in that defensive front is really enticing this year.
Well, that's, you know, much like everything. Fans,
and there's no Davis brothers involved.
Yeah,
and, fans, you know, those guys, right?
They need to just cut Chris Wormley or trade. I'm like,
no.
He got seven sacks last year. There's value there.
I mean, I think he's probably the least flashy and least exciting of that group because some of them are young and you're excited about the
hour. But he's an NFL player.
Yeah. I mean, at worst, I think he's an inning eater. I mean, he's that veteran starting pitcher with a 4.5 ERA. That,
not going to go out there and embarrass you.
Right. It gets a lot of millions every year. And, right, you know, it's not your best starter, but he goes out there and gives you meaningful snaps.
Because one thing that doesn't happen, you know, is that offensive lines don't.
That's
they're on the field 60, 70 snaps.
Right.
Where if you're constantly rolling defensive linemen out there at them, those defensive linemen are fresh. The offensive linemen, you know, In the fourth quarter has already played 50-plus snaps. If Cam Hayward's only played 30, well, that's a big deal, you know.
Exactly. I want Cam to play less because he'll be even better. You know, and I think that you won't have as big a drop-off as you used to. And even situationally, I mean, I think the Leal draft pick is extremely fascinating. And he may be – there might be games he doesn't play at all. But there might be some he plays 20% of the snaps just because the guy in front of him is a good matchup for him. Or – Joel Bitonio is a great guard. Okay. But if he has to block over the course of a 65-snap game, he's got to block Alualu, Cam, Loudermilk, and Leal, and Wormley. One of them's going to have something he doesn't like. You know what I mean? Whatever it is. I mean, he could be John Hanna. One of them is going to be his least favorite matchup. Cam, of course,
probably
will be that
Cam,
guy.
Yeah.
But the others, maybe the others are the better example. Those other four. And you're like, well, Leal's starting to beat him with his swim move, his rip move, whatever it is.
Because you start to get a little tired.
And he gets a little tired and a little bit of an something gets exposed. And it's a heck of a lot harder. I mean, a great pitcher, there's probably someone in the lineup he doesn't like facing. You know what I mean? Whether it's a great hitter or not, there's somebody that gives him a little more trouble than he should.
I think with Minka out right now, dealing with that wrist injury, they get a chance to take a good long look at KZ.
Yeah.
At free safety.
And he doesn't have to be Minka, but if he can just be trustworthy.
Yeah.
So that I can sneak Minka down to guard.
I can play all three of those guys at the same time, and now all of a sudden Minka's my slot corner at times.
Mm-hmm. It's just like your conversation last segment about, it's great that you have good offensive players, but if I know where they're going to line up every snap, it's a little easier to game plan for them. Yeah. And Minka's the best free safety in the league, but if there's 10 snaps a game where he doesn't line up in the deep middle,
it's just
one more wrinkle.
It's the Troy Polamalu conversation.
Yeah, right.
Where is he going to be at on this play?
Yeah, right.
You know, that was the great – they could line up with everybody else in the same spots in those days.
But 43 is – we got to find
him. When Carson Palmer walks up to the line of scrimmage, he's going to find 43. Okay, he's over here. But then when the ball snapped, he might be over there.
Mm-hmm. What's that mean for the opposite weak side linebacker? Well, he has a different responsibility if Troy's here, and, you know, on and on.
I'm going to throw away from this guy. Okay, well, the play was meant to go in that direction. Now I got to check out of that play into something else. That play wasn't quite what we wanted here.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of things that you can do there just to cause a little bit of havoc.
It's just a hunch that I think you'll see Minka near the line of scrimmage a little bit.
Well, they did that early last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of got away from it because, well, they were struggling with some stuff. And they,
right. You know, and he's a great eraser. I mean, he's a wonderful safety
on the
blanket
back end
back
and,
there, right?
Yeah. To make sure guys got on the ground and things of that nature. And people, well, Minka's not having as good a year. Well, they were asking him to do some different things.
And I'm not suggesting KZ's the next Polamalu, but having that slot safety versatility.
He's been a long-time starter.
And he makes plays, and I think he's going to be reliable. You know, if he can make some more plays than Edmonds does, which I expect him to do on a personal basis.
He has over the course of his career.
Yeah, and has more third-level potential than Edmonds. And Edmonds can handle that, too. But it just gives – if he could be a true free once in a while, you know, I'm sure whenever – Joe Burrow sees that, he's going to throw a slant to Ja'Marr Chase in that neighborhood where they wouldn't have when Minka's there. But Minka might be crashing off the edge and hits him in the face first, you know, yeah. because he didn't see it coming. Or, you know, I'm just throwing out
the
examples.
Or Minka reads it and it drops into that spot. I mean,
right.
I mean, he's
pretty, or they bracket Chase because Minka's locking down Boyd or, you know, whoever it is. You know what I mean? You know, there's other ramifications and consequences after that. You know?
I really think that KZ signing is kind of underrated.
Really underrated.
I mean, they
slid
that
cheap too.
Slid that in right after the draft, and it's like, oh, hey, by the way, we signed DeMonte KZ. It's like,
you knew
they had been talking to him earlier in the process, mm-hmm. and I think to you know our point with okay, maybe they were looking at a Daxton Hill in the first round or something like that as a fallback option. Well, then they didn't get that. So, okay, we'll take KZ and add another.
Is he as talented as Dax Hill? Is he as tall as Dax Hill? Of course not. But I have NFL tape of him, too.
Right. We're adding a varsity player to the roster here on the cheap.
There was a year he was with Atlanta where half the year they asked him to be a true slot, almost play after play. And then the other half of the year, and I forget who got hurt, and I have to go back and look at my notes, he played deep middle. You know, I mean, that year he played 50% of slot, 50% of deep middle. There's just not a lot of players in the league that can do both. Was he the best in the league at either? No, but that's okay.
What he's not is a strong safety. I don't see him as competition for Terrell Edmonds.
I don't either, but I'd be shocked if Edmonds still plays 95% of the snaps like he did.
Yeah.
And that might go to 75.
There could be some situations. It's third and 19.
Edmonds off the field.
Let's get another cover guy in the field. Yeah.
Maybe Norwood's out there or, you know, a fourth corner or whatever.
Yeah. But he's got options.
I mean, Edmonds' snap count is nowhere to go but down, so this isn't a profound statement. And I don't think they're down on him. I just don't know that he'll be out there every snap still because there's more options.
There's just so many more options. I mean, I think the depth there is again, they lost one guy in the secondary, but they added, what, three?
Wallace. KZ.
Maybe two.
Didn't draft one, right?
They didn't draft one.
Right. Okay.
So you added two. You lost one, you added two.
And well, I still think Norwood's improving.
Yeah.
You know.
You lost one, you added two. Much like the offensive line.
Right.
You lost one, but you added two.
Yeah. So do you still think there's any chance Joe Hayden ends up on this team?
I don't think that happens at this point. Because
I think he'd have to leave his ego at the door.
Somebody, I think if they had an injury, I think that would be something.
We call him tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, if heaven forbid Weatherspoon or Wallace or Sutton gets hurt, I think you call him tomorrow.
Yeah.
But it gets a little crowded. And
like Joe's not going to play just to play, even though he's.
And you can't guarantee him a starting job.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd love to have him in the building, but is it an Ingram situation? That's a bad example because one was a great stealer and one was a bad stealer, you know, attitude-wise, where, hey, I want to play, you know, and I've deserved it. I've had a great career.
I know the system. I know that's the coaching staff. I know the guys around me.
There is value to getting great
people. They could sign him 3 days before the season starts.
Right, and he could line up at left corner all day long and be fine,
assuming
he's in shape.
Speaking of which, Ike Taylor. Saw Ike Taylor then. Ike Taylor looks like he did when he was a rookie.
Which is – an impressive-looking corner, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, by any
but he
standard.
Still looks like he's 23, 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Long and in shape.
Yeah.
And right.
It's amazing. Some guys just have good genes.
They sure do.
You and I are not among them.
They sure aren't. I mean, I can't cite this example enough. That year of the Browns, always talking about year of the Browns, getting on the treadmill, and I'm struggling along and walking and maybe jogging. Then Paul Warfield, who's 30 years older than me, gets on and full sprint as he's chatting to somebody next to him. I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah, it's a different animal than you.
Yes. We should not be in the same building on the same treadmill.
Dudes,
right?
Yeah.
100%. People should never forget that.
Yeah. We're going to take another break. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio. Steelers finishing up their afternoon session. The sun is out. They're getting a little bit of heat today.
Yeah, it's a little toasty all of a sudden.
Starting to clear the field here of the fans, the VIP fans. So that means they've probably got about maybe 1.5 sessions left here of practice. So we'll come back to finish that off when we return here on The Drive, live from Chuck Noll Field at St. Vincent College on Steelers Nation Radio.
Black and gold football lives here 24/7. You're listening to SNR.
Here we go, Steelers, here we go.
This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24/7 home of the black and gold. SNR, Steelers Nation Radio.
watching Calvin Austin III take a little jet sweep action there. And
he can scoot, man.
Zigzag his way down the sideline there. Now, again, the defense.
This is advantageous for him.
I don't know
the
defense is.
They're not going to knock him into next week.
No,
right.
Even if they have that shot, then that's not what's going to happen here. But
to just blow smoke up, you know, and be all positive here. The first time I saw him in person, I went, he's even smaller than I thought. I mean, I knew he was little. I saw his combine numbers, and they don't lie. He's a very little NFL player.
Yes.
Boy, is he explosive, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not just straight-line explosive. He is loose-hipped and change of direction and vision. And when he opens it up, he goes, man. I mean,
so
he's
listed at 5'9 and 162 pounds. Now, he said
– that's a lie, I think.
He said at minicamp he's closer to 170. He typically plays at 170. I think he was 162 for the combine, so he could run – faster.
Well, I think the 5'9 is the thing I was questioning.
Well, he might be 5'8.
I think he was 5'080 at the combine. I think he just made 5'8.
That's fine.
Oh, no, right.
Tyreek Hill isn't the biggest guy in the world.
No, but Tyreek's bigger than him and
probably
20 pounds heavier than him.
Is he faster than him?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen
him
fast.
By a lot?
I'm talking about in pads on game day.
We haven't seen that.
I would
yet.
Never pick anyone over Tyreek.
Anyone?
Anyone.
I'll bet Deion Sanders was faster.
He's a name I was thinking of. Moss was a name I was thinking of. Because those long striders don't look the same.
Yeah.
Tyreek's scary, though.
Woodson can run. You know, he was a 4-2 guy when he came out, which was legit.
Yeah, and played that way.
Yeah.
But he was also big. I mean, he's a lot bigger than Deion.
He was way bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a safety.
I mean, Austin has, you know, rare speed, though, and rare acceleration. And I wouldn't have said this is the fastest offense the last couple of years.
It has not been.
No.
You know, I mean, Juju's out there. He's James Washington. They were all 4-5 guys.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not slow, but
and
there wasn't.
Deontay's a 4-5-ish guy.
Including Najee.
Yeah.
I mean, including Ben, including Juju. I mean, like, they weren't the fastest skill group out there.
Now they got some speed.
Yeah. I think Pickens runs really well, too.
Yeah.
Especially on the field, ball in hand.
I think he was like 4.47. Coming off the knee injury,
I'll
bet he's a lot faster. That's the thing about him now, right now.
Yeah.
He's a year removed from a knee injury and zigzagging his way through defenses and stuff. Like, you wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know. I wonder what his 40 was as a true freshman and all that stuff, too. And, you know, that's the way he plays now. And that's what you're really getting. You know, you're getting a first-round player.
Yeah, I think you are. It's kind of the Stephon Tuitt situation.
Right. You bought it at a discount. Because everyone wasn't quite sure at a really deep position. So a lot of ties were probably broken in the other guy's favor.
We'll take the healthy guy.
I just know more about him. Yeah. I don't want to get fired because this guy's not healthy. You know, right.
Yeah.
But if you a little more job security falls to you, you take him.
Boy, if he actually does work out like a first-round draft pick.
I think he is. I think that's the way I view him.
Yeah.
That's a game changer.
Because that's what the Steelers got in that 2014 draft. They took Shazier.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took Tuitt in the second round. It's like almost like having two.
Right. And this year they might not get a thing out of their first round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very possible. And in a way, that's what you want. So if you get a first round talent in the second round that helps, you know, your other first down the line or Trubisky, the Pickens pick is real high on my list. The two receivers are my favorite picks they made.
And there was some buzz on Leal, especially early in the process, that he was a potential. First
oh, yeah. And, all the way too early mock drafts, he was like a top 10 pick.
Those are
hit and miss.
The stuff from 2 years ago when they were coming out of the draft, Pickens and Leal were both first-round guys.
Yeah, in every draft.
When the draft process started, Leal was still considered a potential first-round pick.
Yeah.
You know, there was some stuff that had him as the number one defensive tackle.
Yeah, 100%.
And then things kind of changed. He didn't run as well as the other guys. And
I mean, he didn't have a bad year. Yeah. I mean, I've even made it sound like, wow, he really fell off. I think he's a true tweener.
Yeah.
And tweener used to be a terrible word. Now it's a positionless football. It's a good word. But in his case, where does he line up? I mean, he has to have a home first, and I don't know where his home is exactly for most teams.
No, I don't know either, but I think you figure that out. And, again,
it's
much when you're taking him in the third round, that's a much different conversation.
Much different conversation. If he's a sub-package-only guy or we'll figure it out once he gets here type of situation.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
They had room for another defensive lineman, and we'll take a talented one.
If he becomes a 400 or 500 snap-a-game guy,
yeah,
as a third-round guy, that's fine. As a first-round guy? probably not so much.
But as Coach says, I mean, when in doubt, I'll take a pedigree guy.
Yeah, that seems to be what they've been living on here.
Their second and third round pick have more pedigree than their first round pick.
Sort of.
In a way. I mean, just college career wise. Yeah. I mean, five-star recruits.
We're talking about the guy who was a third in the Heisman voting last year. He has no pedigree.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's a one-year. I mean, people didn't know who Pickett was 3 years ago. They knew who these guys were.
I mean, people in Pittsburgh did, but not necessarily.
He wasn't on top of the list.
Wasn't on the NFL radar like he was after last year.
Neither was Joe Burrow.
Right.
Right.
Neither was Kyler Murray, for that matter.
Baker. A lot of these first overall picks lately have not been. Wentz, Goff, you know.
Yeah, so it does change. That's why, you know, when you look at those, you know, the early drafts and all that stuff, that's a good place to start, but don't stop there.
No, right. And everyone talking about, well, next year's quarterback draft's much better. It sure looks that way. I mean, I bet
right
a quarterback
now, as
goes,
we sit here in July.
I mean, I'll bet my bottom dollar a quarterback is picked before 20 next year. But you
probably
don't know.
Multiple. Yeah.
But you can't count on that. I mean, you look at I'm sure Kevin and those guys have paid attention to future drafts at that position. But you can't just bank on it like, well, next year's better. We'll get our guy then.
Spencer Rattler.
Yeah. It doesn't mean there's 32 of them and you're still going to get one.
The kids that's at Pitt this year, the transfer from USC.
Slovis, right.
Slovis.
Yeah, he was a new
those guys, Spencer Rattler and Slovis in 2 years ago were like, these guys will be the top two draft picks when they come out.
Nope.
Neither one of them's even at the same college.
Right. And maybe they redeem their careers and they get back into it. Who knows?
Well, that's the other thing about this. And you worked in the college game. I wanted to ask you this. Like, this transfer portal stuff.
I don't understand it very well. And it makes me feel old. And I frankly just hate it. Yeah. Because I looked at it through. I recruited this kid. He red shirts. You know, you have this big long-term five-year plan for him or even a four-year plan. You invested so much. And then he gets a little glory after finally seeing the field, and he says, I'm out of here.
Especially for me, that's the quarterback position. Like, these guys, if they're not starting within 2 years, they're transferring somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. And I went through that Flacco situation,
I get
that to go down a level.
But do I want a guy who doesn't want to fight?
Right.
Like, you just give up after, they've decided they're going to go with this guy. Well, I'm going to transfer then.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the best character trait I've ever heard. You don't want to come back, you know, something happy. He struggles a couple games, and all of a sudden they go to you. Because we've seen that happen, too. I think that's how Mason Rudolph broke into the lineup.
Or Tua. You know what I mean? Hurts was kind of a star at that point.
Yeah.
In a national championship game. You know,
nobody was
benched.
So, yeah.
right.
I think Tua, so it does happen.
Yeah, if Tua would have went to Middle Tennessee State, he wouldn't have been the fifth pick in the draft or third pick in the draft or whatever he was, you know?
Yeah, and I get it. There's, again, some athletic arrogance there. I've been using that word a lot this week.
Yeah.
The athletic arrogance. But it always comes into play.
It does.
That these guys think they're the best. And, okay, it's not going to work out for me here. I'll go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Somebody else will let me.
And I do understand their side of things, too, is I shouldn't be locked in here and have no freedom whatsoever. This is a free country. I should be able to do what I want.
We got a little tussle here. First
one of the year, I think, right?
Mason Cole got into some yesterday. This is stretching out a little bit.
Somebody's jumping over the pile to try to clock someone in the head. What do we got going here?
And a whole bunch of offensive linemen. I think one of the defensive linemen got knocked down, or one of the linebackers got knocked down, and somebody did not appreciate that.
Wasn't thrilled with that situation.
Yeah. But if you're the offensive lineman, you're trying to establish something here.
I thought this was the first, you know, scuffle of the year, and then you said Mason Cole got into it. I thought in the back of my head, I'm like, good.
Well, that's what
right.
I know Chris Halicki, who works with us at DK Pittsburgh Sports, went over and talked to Cole about that yesterday after the practice, because I guess there was an interception and he thought the defense was celebrating it just a little bit too much.
Good.
So he went over and kind of
give him a little
yelled at him,
let him know about it.
Yeah, and just kind of pushing and shoving about it. And he said, hey, stuff's going to happen out here. Temper's going to flare. It's not a big deal, but, you know, we got some pride here, too. We're trying to stand up for my guys.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a prison situation where you should go find the toughest guy and try to beat up Cam Hayward in week one.
Well, that brings me to Cam Hayward,
right.
Who essentially
but fought. But he was the new puppy, yeah.
Fought every offensive lineman on this team as a rookie.
Yeah.
Like, Cam's now the elder statesman on this team. He's the leader.
Easy to forget that version of Cam, right?
That young puppy version of Cam running around out here fighting everybody in sight.
And there was a pretty good D-line in front of him at that point, too. You know, I mean, he wasn't the first pick in the draft counted on to come in and light the world on fire. He wasn't Joe Green. You know, I mean, he was a late first. And, I loved hearing that about Cole. He's new. I'm not just going to be passive and this is the Steeler way. I'll be quiet. And, yeah. No, go over and assert yourself. You know?
I'm a tough guy too.
Right. Don't be celebrating in front of us.
So yeah, we'll see. I didn't quite see who was in that. It just turned into a big scrum. I did see them picking one of the. It looked like an outside linebacker up off the ground. Somebody was helping him up off the ground, and then things got a little.
Well, yeah, that's fine
crazy
by me.
There real quick, but. Yeah, so we'll see.
We'll get the details on that one for you.
We will, as things come out here, but we're going to take another break. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio. The Steelers just wrapping up practice. That was the final play of practice from the looks of it. As they finish up day three here, the sun is now shining at St. Vincent College. The fans are all lining along the pathway up to the dorms or up to the locker room over there. So,
that wraps it up.
That's going to wrap up hour two. We'll be back with hour three right after this.
Black and gold football lives here 24/7. You're listening to SNR.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.